Okay, at this time I'd like to introduce the first speaker, which is Alicia Kay. She's from
Meditation and Zilly.
I'm Alicia, I'm an addict.
Hi, hey, Alicia.
Can you have a moment of silence and just use it to invite my higher power in and just use it for whatever you choose to? So, Zilly Noble is a place, if you were wondering, if you're not from there, where my home group is. It's been a really important part of my recovery. The first time I ever went to that meeting, I probably had about 60 days clean, and I was fresh off of, like, I wasn't even in a relationship. I dated this guy in the room for less than 30 days, and when we broke up, it was like the end of the world, right? Because all my feelings were so big at that time, and I was so new. And the person who was chairing that meeting shared about the exact same experience. Like, they had just broken up with their significant other, and it was really important for me to hear that, you know, to hear that identification with another addict and to, like, feel that I was in the exact right place in the exact right moment. And the way that our meeting opens, we start with 5 minutes of quiet reflection. After we do the readings and clean time and all those things, so before the meeting itself, you know, the discussion part, we start with a 5 minutes of quiet reflection. I really value that time because it just helps me to get out of the way and to really reflect on what's going on in my life. And it definitely helped me to tap into myself and, like, finding that sense of spirituality. And, like, sometimes it's still really uncomfortable for me. And 5 minutes really isn't a very long time, but sometimes it feels like an eternity. Like, I have to sit with myself. I can't be on my phone or watching TV or talking to someone or being distracted and getting out of myself, because there are still a lot of times where I find myself wanting to do that. So the topic of this is spiritual awakening. I'm going to try to stay on topic, but we'll see how that goes. So going a little bit further back in time, like, when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking about how I was raised and what my relationship was like with spirituality growing up. And it was really confusing for me growing up. My parents were involved in a group that, like, if you Google it, it's considered a cult, actually. It's called the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness. And there were a lot of, like, contradictory beliefs. Like, they believed in Jesus, but then they also believed in reincarnation and karma. So, like, before I was even in kindergarten, I was told, like, if I had a stomachache, it was because in a past life I killed my wife and my children and my entire family, cursed God, like, that kind of stuff, like, on a regular basis. I was told that. And, like, okay, well, we cleared the karma, so you can never, ever talk about it again. And, like, that sort of thing happened a lot, you know? So, like, really weird shit like that growing up. And I had a really hard time relating to other people, you know, because most of my friends were, like, pretty standard, like, Jewish or Christian. And there was, like, a little bit of both of those things for me growing up in terms of, like, religion. So I wasn't really sure what to believe, because I had all the, like, crazy reincarnation, like, hippie woo-woo stuff from my parents. But then, like, my grandparents, some of them wanted to celebrate Christmas and some of them wanted to light the menorah. I didn't know what was going on. And I didn't really know, like, what it really meant to believe or to feel that. You know, like, when I was really little, I, like, kind of went along with it because that's what my parents told me, and, like, I bought into it. But, like, as I got older and I started to just feel really disconnected, like, from myself and, like, I've heard other addicts say, just not feeling a part of, I just didn't identify with it anymore because I started to, like, use my brain and just see all the contradictions that were being taught to me. And eventually, like, as an angsty teenager, I just decided that, like, there was no God, and if there was, he was this guy with spyglass, and, like, I was the ant, and he wanted to burn me. You know, I had a resentment towards whatever was out there that may or may not have existed. And I carried that with me when I started to use. So, like, I as things started happening in my mind to me in my using, and, like, I strongly identified with that. I strongly identified with being a victim and not taking responsibility for, like, my role in things. I just blamed God, you know? And even though I still would, like, have that non-committal belief that, like, oh, it doesn't exist. But if it does, it's fucking me over, like, intentionally. By the time I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't really believe in anything, and I got into that place of being really spiritually dead and spiritually bankrupt. And I didn't really want to live. I wasn't really living in a sense of, like, feeling alive. I was just existing. I was going through my life, and I had no real identity, no real friends. I had a lot of situationships. I had a lot of people that I used and that used me. And none of my relationships were meaningful. I had put a lot of distance between anyone that had tried to love me or take care of me. And I had to start to rebuild that here in Narcotics Anonymous. And when I think of what it means to have a spiritual awakening, it's just to have that fire in your spirit be relit, you know? And I see it all the time, like in other addicts. I see them come in, you know, and I'm sure a lot of you can relate to this. And you know that look when somebody's brand new and they just don't have that zest for life. They don't have that spark in their eye. They don't have that passion. There's no joy there. And to me, like, at its simplest, like, that's all that a spiritual awakening is. It's like having that fire in your belly, just having that desire to live. And I definitely got that back in recovery, and, like, probably for about my first year, I had not just a fire in my belly, but, like, a fire under my ass to go to meetings and go to retreats, and I went to retreats and went to retreats, like, all over Pennsylvania. I even went to one down in Maryland, which I go back to every year. And besides that, like, for me, I think my first spiritual awakening had been shortly after, like, my first sponsor told me that I need to start to pray. And it goes without saying that I had a real problem with the G word when I first came into these rooms. And her suggestion was that if I didn't believe, that I should pray to the God of her understanding and just try to fake it till I make it. Just give it a chance. And the first couple times, nothing happened. And finally, I got on my knees and I actually gave it a real attempt. You know, and for me, like, the act of getting on my knees and praying, like, forced me to be humble, which was not something that I came into the rooms with a lot of humility at all. My sponsor actually had me do an assignment on humility. I can't remember if it was before or after I had started my first step, but I was very entitled. If you knew me back then, I was pretty stuck up, and sometimes I still can be. Work in progress. But anyway, on my knees, practicing some humility, and I was able to, like, be honest with, at that time, what I identified as, like, my sponsor's higher power. And I prayed in a way that I had never done before, because even though, like, I'd had all that, like, weird spiritual stuff growing up, I had never really been taught to pray, like, not in a way that felt genuine or that really resonated with me. I never really built a connection to a higher power. So that was where it started to build, you know, on my knees, tears streaming down my face, and, like, being honest about what was going on and what I was struggling with, like, all those big early recovery feelings. And I started to have more experiences like that. I started to, like, have, like, I've heard other addicts share about, like, almost like an inner voice just telling me that, like, things are going to be okay and feeling that things are going to be okay. And as I've continued to pray and meditate, like, my idea of, like, what spiritual and what a higher power is has changed. And I hope that it continues to change, and I hope that I never really understand it, because I don't ever really want to be done with that. Like any good relationship, like, it should keep it, like, continue on, you know? Like, if it's something that, like, I understand completely, it's not big enough. I mean, there are probably a lot of other things that, like, I thought of when I was first asked about this topic. And it's funny, when Courtney asked me to speak on this, I was like, is it okay if I haven't worked all 12 steps? And she's like, yeah, it's fine. It's another topic. But I really, like, got up in my head and I got really jacked up about it. But, like, at its core, like, a spiritual awakening is just, you know, feeling that life inside come back, you know, and not feeling spiritually dead. And for me, like, feeling connected to the God of my understanding and, like, being present in this moment. And I've learned to do that in a lot of different ways. I like to do yoga a lot as well, which I'm not going to go into, but if you want to talk about it, you can do that. And, yeah, I think that's all I have to say.
At this time, I'd like to introduce the second speaker, which is Seth S. from the Spiritual Not Religious group of Narcotics Anonymous.
I'm an addict named Seth. It's good to hear that, like, I'm not alone. Because, like, I heard a Me Too. Because, like, immediately, like, when I think of spiritual awakening, like, I think of the wording within step 12, and, like, I'm not there yet. And, like, that was intimidating to me, if that makes sense. So, like, I hate speaking in front of people. Like, this isn't my favorite way to serve Narcotics Anonymous. Like, I start a lot of speaking commitments like that because, like, it makes me feel as though, like, I'm putting it out there so, like, it goes away type shit. Gotcha. So, yeah, I hate doing this, but, like, it's always an honor and a privilege to serve Narcotics Anonymous in any way, shape, or form. This program has given me a life that, like, not only did I never think was possible, but I never wanted because I thought it was kind of square. And, like, now that, like, this is what I'm doing, like, I found out on, like, how much I was really missing out on. I've had some spiritual awakenings, like, not the one that came as a result of, like, finishing all 12 steps, but, man, like, I used to tell my sponsor all the time, like, I have these little mini epiphanies, and, like, I always just, like, open the basic text before I share on anything, and, like, it went to what can I do, and, like, it was saying that, like, we grow spiritually, and I'm paraphrasing, that we grow spiritually by, like, helping another addict. And, like, I've had spiritual awakenings that came from other addicts helping me. And I've also, like, received them from, like, helping other people. I had a prison sentence. I had a sponsor in prison. I worked the first 3 steps in prison. I finished a 4th step. I was unwilling to share that 4th step in prison because, like, nobody in prison needs to know anything much more about me than, like, you could find out if you looked at my sentencing sheet. I'm not telling you. I wasn't willing to tell you about, like, who hurt me, why it hurt me, the institutions I was scared of, who I was scared of, why I was scared of them. Because, like, there was that non-existent virtue of, like, I can't show fear. And, like, I worked the first couple steps, and, like, I had worked them with a man who had more experience in staying clean than I did, had a sponsor from the outside and, like, shit like that. But, like, I failed to grasp the spiritual nature of what we do here. And, like, I thought if I filled out the paperwork, I would be cured or something. Didn't check out. I came home, I got high, and, like, I found myself in a place of spiritual pain that, like, I had never imagined in my life. One of my I nevers happened, and, like, I ended up, you know, crying in a bathroom just wanting to be clean, like, using against my will. So, like, the parole man gave me the opportunity to go to treatment. I had never done that. I'm the addict who told district attorneys, like, I will absolutely not leave this fucking prison block to go to treatment. That is crazy. But I was given the opportunity to go to treatment, man, and I called that dude from that I worked a couple steps with, and I was like, Joe, hey, man, like, I just wanted to give you a call, like, I've been using, and he was like, I know, and I was like, how? And he was like, because I knew, and I was like, well, I fell to urine, and I'm in treatment, and he said, good, I love you, right? And, like, I was dumbfounded that, like, by me saying, hey, man, I've been lying to you for a few months every time I checked in, and, like, I screwed everything up, and I'm in treatment, and I'm lucky to not be back upstate, and for somebody to be like, that's good, I love you, man, like, that lit me up, right? Because, like, I was under the impression that I wasn't worth shit, I wasn't never gonna be shit, I wasn't gonna be able to turn nothing around, I screwed it all up again, right? I was missing my daughter's second Christmas, most likely, and I was, like, in a real low place, and for somebody to say, man, like, I'm glad you made it there, and I love you, thank God you're still alive, like, lit me back up, man, and, like, that was one of my first experiences with, like, within this process of, like, feeling my spirit kind of come back alive, right? And, like, I've got to experience them, much like the 12 step says, like, from a result of working these steps, you know, I got a spiritual awakening. Like, most of my little mini epiphanies come through working the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. One of the biggest little spiritual awakenings I came to realize was a thing is, like, I'm not a victim. I'm a big part of my problem, like, the whole thing. I'm not a victim of my circumstances, man. In that first step, like, understanding that, like, I don't have to like reality to accept that it's real. And, like I can change my reality and not just my perception of it through a chemical. Like, that was some big shit for an addict like me. I don't know how, like, I made it that far in life alive with that attitude. You know what I mean? Like, the poor me, it's not my fault. Like, I'm not owning up to shit attitude. Like, I don't even know how I made it that far without much worse consequences. Probably not really my business. And, like, I don't know, man. Like, just accepting that reality and sort of, like, understanding, man, that, like, I put myself in all those situations, like, opened me up to, like, being able to do something about it, man, and that, having that type of juice again was, like, something different for me, man, and that, like, lit me up, too, and, I remember, like, when, like, I sort of started having the belief that, like, this thing might be possible, man. Like, there's a guy who brought a H&I meeting into the facility I was in, and, like, I love H&I. I'm grateful for H&I. Like, I'll continue to serve H&I forever because, like, without it, I don't know if I would be clean. And he was telling a story that was similar enough to mine that I could identify with the pain, and I was like, if this motherfucker can stay clean, like, just maybe I can too. Right? And, like my spirit, man, was alive, so, like, I started feeling like maybe, like, people weren't just full of shit, and I decided to give, like, all those little suggestions they were giving me a try, and, like, they hit on it in the H&I meeting, like, 90 meetings in 90 days, get a sponsor, get a home group. Like, I did some of those things, man, and, like, I started gaining some tangible evidence, and I came to believe, right? Like, that act as if that it talks about in that second step, man, like, I don't really know if they're full of shit or not, but, like, maybe if I just pretend that I think doing the right thing will get me somewhere, and I just do some of them right things, like, maybe some good stuff will come from it. And, like, when it did, like, it made me feel that, like, there was a possibility for me to improve the quality of my life, man. And, like, I've never, like, before I showed up here, man, like, I've never been the addict that believed that it could get any better for me, right? Like, maybe you, but, like, it ain't never gonna get better for me. Like, I'm gonna probably die in this, right? Like, I remember, like, coming, having, like, a mini epiphany with 1 year clean, man. My little cousin was giving me a ride home. He had met me out in Johnstown. I think I was working at the city that day, and we went to a meeting and I celebrated or whatever. And we were coming home and he was like, man, that's crazy. It's like really randomly. And I was like, what is crazy? You know, and he was like, you've been clean for a year. And I was like, yeah, that is pretty fucking crazy. And then he, like, looked me dead in my face and was like, I always figured, like, you would either die or go to jail for so long that you might as well have been dead. Right? And, like, I had enough of a level of self-honesty that I was like, me too. Right? And, like, I don't know why that realization, like, was comforting in that moment. But, like, I felt hope. You know what I mean? And, like, that hope has been, like, the principle behind most of those, like, little spiritual awakenings and mini epiphanies. Like, the hope, the message is hope, and the promise is freedom. Freedom from active addiction. Like, the hope piece is, like, what keeps my spirit lit, right? Like, that same little cousin, man, and, like, this thing is attraction, not promotion. Like, that same little cousin, 2 years later, was like, yo, are you still, like, clean and shit? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I'm gonna go to detox, man. He had been on a maintenance program for, like, 5 years. And he was like, I'm gonna go to treatment. And I was like, cool. And, like, I watched him pick up 90 days not too long ago, and I was like, that's that therapeutic piece, man, where, like, the spiritual growth comes from, like, us helping each other, right? Because, like, I'm pretty sure, like, being that I felt hopeless, like, I could identify with, like, when we'd have conversations about it, like, his hopelessness. And to see somebody else break out of hopelessness, man, that's just more fucking hope for me. Like, this thing has, like, lit me up and given me a reality that, like, I never thought was possible again. Like, I was using the restroom before I got in the shower, and I was reading Facebook because, like, that's what I like to do when I poop. Right? And, like, Facebook memories is, like, a real funny thing because, like, I'm scrolling through it, and, like, 4 years ago today was, like, my release date from a state correctional institution. Right? A fucking felon. A dope fiend. Like, you could have called me a lot of shit. I'm still a felon. I'm still not a licensed driver, and I don't drive because it's not the right thing to do. But, like, I've also been a full-time employee for, like, 3 years now. A manager of a store. You know what I mean? Like, and I do all that without a driver's license. I've been scared to death of being a father for years now. Like, I remember going through, like, my third step and, like, asking people, like, yo, like, how do I be a father? And then being like, just pray. I fucking hate that answer. Just pray about it. So, like, the one day, like, I'm praying about it, right? And I was fishing. And I'm praying, and I'm like, dude, just, like, I'm trying to figure out how to be a father. Like, I never really had a dad. Like, I just want to be a father. and like this there is a mom duck and like six little baby ducks behind her. And like I remember looking and I was like, oh cool, a duck, I'm gonna take a picture for Facebook. Right? So I break out my phone and shit and I think I'm being all slick and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna get this picture. And the duck looked at me and then it quacked at the babies and they all sped up. And I was like, holy fuck, like that's how you be a parent. Right? Like that was a spiritual awakening for me, was like realizing like lead by example, don't let her hurt herself. Right? For the past 2 years, like I've been scared to death to be a father and like through other people seeing things in me that like I couldn't see myself, like they encouraged me enough that like I took out a loan because like I got some credit and I've had a bank for a while. I got an attorney, not a defense attorney, like an attorney to do something positive for me besides just keep me out of jail so I could continue to use. Right? And like I went to get custody of my daughter, man. Like I'm a full-time dad and this little girl fucking loves me. Right? Like from the little kid who was asking everybody like how to be a father. Like I still don't know how to be a dad. Don't let me stunt. Like the reality is I'm half of the time I'm terrified. But that's not the point. Like the point is like the spiritual growth from like that therapeutic value of like addicts being like, bro, like you can do this. Like you don't have to be scared. Practice some courage. Right? Like when I went to pick her up last Friday and like it was the last time that like I don't really have to take her back, you know what I mean? Unless it's mutually agreed upon, like that's exactly what the custody order says. Like they brought her outside and she ran out screaming daddy and I was like, "Damn, like I must be doing something right." And like it lit me up. Like this little girl looks up to me. Like most of the time I feel like I don't know how to take care of myself. But like this little girl has like the faith and trust in me to like run up screaming daddy and know she's coming with me and like that's the shit that lights me up, man. Like that's the tangible evidence I've received from putting in footwork and staying in position and waiting for blessings to come and bitching about the blessings because sometimes I'm a little bitch. Most times. Little bitch. And all my friends are too. Because they're heckling me in the crowd just for the recorder. But like those are the things that light me up today, man, is like I came in here broken with no self-worth, man, and I'm worth something today. Like I'm a father, I'm an employee. Like I was on the phone with somebody that I knew for years and I got high with for years and they're in a prison waiting on sentencing and they're going upstate. And like one of the things that I struggled with was like, how am I going to not smoke reefer? Because like my whole family smokes the reefer. And like this dude was talking to me and he's like, it's really crazy that you don't even smoke weed no more. And I was like, yeah, it's fucked up, ain't it? Right? And you know what he said? Like, maybe I can too. Like, that's the exact same fucking thing I said in H&I. It was like, you know, if this big bald guy with all the same fucking pain I felt, he's still clean, might be possible for a guy like me. Right? That's the spiritual awakening. To me, you know what I mean? Like, I have a lot of little mini epiphanies. I don't know what comes after step 12. I ain't there. I ain't gonna lie to you. But, like, I know that like, realizing that, like, I fall into the category of any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. Like, I never pictured a new way of life was in the cards for a guy like me. Man, and, like, to be a father, to be an employee, to have people be able to count on you, to have people say, like, hey, if you can, maybe I can, too. Like, that's the shit that lights me up. That's the shit that keeps me here. Like, to me, Narcotics Anonymous is a way of life. Am I perfect? By no means. Am I better than I was when I showed up here? A whole fucking lot better. You know what I mean? On any given day, I can trip myself up and go into the triangle of self-obsession, man. But, like, today, like, I can't play ignorant to the fact that I know there's a solution. Like, when I opened up the basic text to read before I came down here, I opened right up to what can I do. Now, I don't know if it's because it's right in the middle of where the staples are. Or because God wanted me to read it, and we're going to roll with that. But, man, like, that's the blueprint. Like, I know the solution. I know the solution is Narcotics Anonymous. I know the solution is to call somebody and get some of that therapeutic value. So I usually call one of my friends, one of them little bitches. Now, I love them, though. Like, you know, the guys in my life keep me honest. They keep me focused. They keep me going. Even the little sister that I never asked for, I love her, too. You know, NA is a way of life, man, and that therapeutic value keeps me alive every day. Because, like, it ain't getting no better out there. I've been to jails. I've been to institutions. Like, I have thoroughly come to believe that, like, if I use again, like, I will die. Maybe not, but I ain't willing to fucking shoot dice with that one. So, I don't know, man. I'm grateful for this program. I'm grateful for the predecessors that saw fit to make a thing, make a program like this for an addict like me. I think that's all I got.